Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast again. I'm your host, Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. If you haven't checked out our magazine, please go do so. Fretboardjournal.com. Click on that subscribe button. As a reader-supported magazine and, I guess, listener-supported magazine, you all power my life, basically. You power everything that I do, all the podcasts that we're putting out. We have a couple new podcasts we're going to be putting out later this year, the events that we do, the magazine, literally everything. There's not a lot of advertising in any of the projects that I do, and that is because you all support it. So click on the subscribe button over on fretboardjournal.com. You can get a digital subscription for just $30. Gets mailed to you instantly. It's a great way to support the show if you are trying to go paperless. So you're probably wondering, how many podcasts is this guy going to put out? And the answer this week is two. I'm putting out this episode right on the heels of the Jonathan Stout episode that so many of you have raved about. If you haven't checked that one out yet, please do. To talk about the Fretboard Summit 2023. It's about a month and a week away. I can't believe that it's already upon us. The website, fretboardsummit.org, has a lot of the details that we've been brewing over the last year or so. But there are a lot of details that are not on there yet as we kind of finalize the Jenga game of scheduling and we figure out where we put the slots and who's on what stage and all that other good stuff. So I wanted to spill the beans on all that and give you kind of a deep dive. And in addition to that, I've got a couple of interviews that both are Fretboard Summit related. First up, we're going to talk to Creston Lee of Creston Guitars out of Burlington, Vermont, one of the great boutique electric guitar builders. He's been featured in our magazine. He's been to every Fretboard Summit that I've ever thrown, even the early ones back in California. And last year, I roped him into this crazy idea, sort of a spoof of the Iron Chef game show, where he and another guitar builder, Duncan Price, built a parts caster in an hour. I just posted the highlight reel from that. I'll include it in the show notes. Creston's been to literally every event we've ever thrown, and I wanted to get his perception on why he likes them so much, why he thinks maybe you would like them, and just get his take. And also, just check in, because I love Creston's work. I love the Sarah Ryan artwork that he puts on a lot of his guitars, and just everything he does is so impeccably done, and he's one of my favorite people to talk to. Also, at the tail end of this podcast, we're going to be talking again to Micah Bruce, who is building this really cool sort of Harmony H49 inspired electric guitar, but it's got a lot more going on than a Harmony did for the Fretboard Summit, and somebody who registers for the Fretboard Summit is going to take that guitar home. So one in 400 odds, basically, that you're going to go home with the coolest one-of-a-kind electric guitar imaginable. I interviewed Micah about a month ago. I know he's made a ton of progress since this interview took place, so we're going to follow up with him one more time before the summit, if he has time, and kind of get the finishing touches on this guitar. But for now, I wanted to just tease what he's up to. It's a cool interview, and it's kind of a doubleheader podcast. Let me just give a quick shout out to our sponsors for this podcast, Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar here in Seattle, one of the great vintage guitar stores around. Follow them on Instagram if you haven't yet. Peghead Nation, you can get your first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription with the promo code Fretboard when you check out. Isotope is still offering you all a discount of 10% with the discount code FRET10. And our friends at Stringjoy Strings, 10% off your first order at stringjoy.com with the promo code Fretboard. Give them a try. Try those strings out. It lets them know that you're listening to the show, and it also gets you a pretty rad set of strings for your acoustic or electric that might be just the ticket. You never know. Try out new stuff. It's what this show is all about, right? So I'm looking at this giant Google sheet of the tentative schedule for the Fretboard Summit. I'm just going to give you some highlights and address a few frequently asked questions, and then we're going to get to this Creston interview. So first off, you are all invited. If you love this show, if you love the magazine that I do, if you love hearing from all of these characters and personalities from the world of guitars, whether it's players or builders, this is an event for you. I've personally curated this 3-day long guitar party for people who like what we do. So if you want to meet Steve McCreary from Collings Guitars, if you want to meet the Huss and Dalton crew, if you want to meet Bob Taylor or Andy Powers from Taylor Guitars, or maybe you want to pick Jake Eddy's brain, or pick with Jake Eddy, or any number of other scenarios, play alongside Bill Frisell, you can do that at the Fretboard Summit. There's no other place in the world where all of this is taking place. This lineup will never be duplicated. We still have a dozen or two tickets left, so literally you should hurry up if you're going to sign up for the three-day all-access pass. And also, if you are a person who just likes guitar collecting and you're like, Jason, I don't play well with others, I don't want to socialize, you should know and you should tell all of your guitar collecting buddies on the forums that this is just like the Midwest's largest luthery show that's ever taken place. So we've got 50 exhibitors from around the world. That's all on fretboardsummit.org. You can get a day ticket for $30 if you just want to go guitar shopping and don't want to do any of the fun and games and parties and concerts. And you can have the same kind of experience you have at like a Healdsburg or Woodstock or Artisan Show or LeConner. And buy a great guitar to take home. For folks who do want to experience the full 3 days, Thursday, you get an early bird, early access to that guitar show. You also, of course, can hit up the guitar show all weekend long, and many people just do that. We've also, on Thursday, got Paul Humiller from Dream Guitars talking about buying your first custom acoustic. We've got some opening remarks from myself and from Jim Newcomb at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, as well as Tony Policastro, who did an incredible video about the Fretboard Summit last year. And Mark Stepman and TJ Thompson are going to be doing a deep dive into early Marden acoustics, and they're being joined, this is not on the website yet, by Greg Hudden. So any of you out there who bought Greg's monumental Marden guitar book, called Hudden's Guide to Marden Guitars, 1833 to 1969. The man himself, the author, is going to be there. We're going to have a dinner break, of course, and there are a ton of great restaurants in the neighborhood of the Old Town School of Folk Music. And then we're going to hear some great music. I am not allowed to tell you yet who is opening for him, but Jeff Parker of Tortoise fame and Jeff Parker fame is going to be playing Thursday night, just for all access 3 day attendees. It's sort of a VIP party concert, and then we're going to have some after hours jams after that. On Friday, Josh Scott of JHS Pedals is going to be hosting the Germanium Chef game show. It's Robert Keeley against Heather Brown. This is sort of like what Creston and Duncan were roped into, but they're making a fuzz pedal in an hour. Josh is doing an incredible job with an all-star panel of judges. And if you are into pedals, you are going to want to come to the Fretboard Summit to meet Josh, to meet Robert Keeley. ZVEX is going to be there. Chris from Union Tube and Transistor just made a limited edition run of Summit-only pedals. And it's going to be a blast. We've also got a panel on design and inlay. Via Mardot is going to be teaching us all a workshop. She's incredible. She's been on this podcast, of course, but you should be following her on Instagram. She is making incredible music right now, and that is her main medium. Jorma Kakkonen is going to be doing a live podcast. Wayne and Jane Henderson are coming to the Fretboard Summit all the way from Rugby, Virginia, and Asheville, North Carolina. Wayne is, of course, the subject of the book Clapton's Guitar, one of the most elusive and interesting acoustic guitar builders of the modern era. His guitars fetch a premium. He is rarely seen outside of Rugby, Virginia. We're bringing him. It's going to be incredible, and it's going to be a great chance to see him and see his guitars and hear him play. He plays as well as he builds guitars. It's insane. We've got Sean McGowan doing a talk. We've got a great hands-on thing with the Blue Guitar Collection. We've got Jorma Kakkonen headlining the show in the big theater on Friday night. We've got Joey Landreth performing as well. We also have, I believe this is official now, Tom Bukovac and Brian Sutton. Tom Bukovac of YouTube's Homeschool in Fame is going to be at the summit. Joe Glazer is going to be interviewing him. We're going to hear them play Tom and Brian, I think probably for the first time in public. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening before. And then on Saturday, we've got, a bunch of Fretboard Journal contributors, including John Thomas and Bob Minner. Bob Minner's doing this deep dive into the music of Norman Blake. Bill Frisell's Guitar Orchestra. Anyone can play alongside Bill Frisell. I know this sounds crazy, but guitar visionary, Grammy winner Bill Frisell is going to be teaching us all one song, and we're all going to play it together, and you can go home with an MP3 of the time you played with Bill Frisell. I know it sounds wild. It's actually happening. Incredible builder Jason Kostel is going to be doing a talk. We've got a workshop on the Banjo Reclamation Project. We've got Tommy Emmanuel. I'm having Adam Miller interview, Tommy. Keep it in Australia, right? You can sit in on that interview. We've also got a Tommy Emmanuel performance on Saturday night. Via Mardo is going to be playing. We're going to have after-hours jams that are going to melt your face with some incredible players who are not officially on the books of the Fretboard Summit, but it's going to be incredible. And a lot of surprises. If you want to come and jam on the acoustic side or the electric side, there's something for you. If you are a fan of the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast, we're going to have a whole room full of vintage amps where you can just hang out, eat some chips in El Pato, meet other listeners of the podcast. Our friends at Rode are actually sponsoring a whole podcast studio. So if there are any content creators out there on the video or podcast front who just want to sign up for this event and maybe get some interviews for future episodes of whatever it is you do, whether or not you're affiliated with the Fretboard Journal, reach out to me, podcast@fretboardjournal.com. It's going to be a blast. Our swag bag is also going to be a blast. In addition to possibly going home with that Bruce guitar that we're going to talk about. Everybody who signs up for a three-day pass is going to get an Apollo pick, a custom Apollo pick. And we have a whole bunch of other surprises. So that is the Fretboard Summit in a nutshell. I didn't go through every workshop, but needless to say, if you want to be a better player, if you just want to come have fun, if you want to just be entertained and see a whole bunch of pretty guitars, whatever your angle is, we've got something for you. And one of the frequently asked questions that I get is, do you have to be a great player to attend this? And I personally can attest that I am not a great player and I have a blast. All of the things we're talking about, even playing with Bill Frisell, are meant to be inclusive to anyone, whether you've been playing for 6 months or a year, or whether you've been playing for 50 years. There is going to be something for you at the Fretboard Summit. And a lot of our attendees don't even bring their guitar. They just come, hang out, maybe shop for a new guitar, but just experience it all. And for folks who are bringing a guitar, there is a guitar check on site. It is secure. If anybody wants to bring their guitars for the after hours jams or maybe the TAVA amp room, but then store it away for 6 hours, there will be, as like a coat check at a concert, there will be a guitar check-in system. I know that airfare can be crazy depending on where you live. Right now, I can tell you there are a bunch of great affordable hotels in the greater Chicago area. There's not one centralized hotel where everyone is staying at. Some people are doing Airbnbs. Some people are doing hotels. The main advice is just like go a little north of the downtown corridor and you'll be sort of close enough to take a quick cab ride to Old Town. And then when you get to Old Town, you're really probably not going to leave the neighborhood for the entire day. There's great restaurants. There's great food right around the corner, literally next door to the venue itself. You can get your fill of guitars and music. You can sneak out, go get some food, coffee, see your friends, see your family. Of course, some people are ambitious. They want to go see a baseball game or they want to go to the restaurants they saw in the Bear. And you can do that too. The summit is there. It's running from 10 a.m. till 11 p.m. midnight every day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and it's going to be great. And then on Sunday, everybody heads home. We don't have any summit official plans. So if you want to go visit a guitar store you've heard about in Chicago, or you want to go eat a great meal before you head home or have some deep dish pizza or whatever, you can do that, or you can just head home. This is my dream event. I put my heart and soul into this. If you have ever wanted to enter the brain of Jason Verlinde or just wanted to meet me, come to Chicago, say hello. I'm going to be running around like crazy, but I love meeting our listeners. And if you are coming to the summit already, please reach out to me, podcast@fretboardjournal.com. Say hello. Hit me up with any questions or any specifics you may have. But just, we've tried to make this very eclectic, interesting weekend for fellow guitar lovers. It's really cool. If you can't make it and you want to do me a solid, just share the news of it on your favorite guitar forum or on Facebook, because we are still getting the word out on this. My goal is to really make this an annual event that is unique and different, like the Fretboard Journal is unique and different from other guitar media. So I hope to see you there. Look, I know it's hard to leave the house. I know not everybody can do it. I know family and friends and life and work get in the way of a lot of this stuff. But if you want to be selfish for 3 days and just geek out with us, you are welcome. It's going to be great. And life is short, and it is so cool to be able to see these people, not only from the industry, but also just incredible players and like-minded guitar collectors in person. It is so impactful and so much fun. And with that, I'm going to hand the podcast over to an interview that I did with Creston Lee just a couple of days ago, again, of Creston Guitars. I roped him into something that honestly I'm forever grateful for, because it was so stressful for him and for Duncan to do what I asked them to do. But they did it, and it was fun, and I think we're all happy that it's over. And for the folks who were there at last year's summit, it's something that they'll probably never forget. So here is my chat with Creston Lee of Creston Guitars, all about the Fretboard Summit. I wanted to talk to you, Creston, because I think you're one of a handful of individuals who has been to every incarnation of this Fretboard Summit, not as an exhibitor, just as a participant until last year. And then we roped you into this crazy thing.
I gave talks at the, I gave a talk at the first one.
Yep.
During which I had a panic attack. And then the second one, I was on a panel with two of my heroes, TK Smith, about whom I'd had the panic attack at the first one, and Saul Cole. And then last year, I was part of that, death match with Duncan Price, which was fun once it was over.
Yeah. And once the back pain went away, we'll get to that in a minute. Right. What brings you to this Fretboard Summit? I'm realizing as we are on the home stretch here of this 2023 Chicago one that I probably do a mediocre job explaining what goes down over the course of these 3 days.
Well, I can tell you as a veteran attendee, I mean, I go, as you say, not to exhibit my own guitars, but it's a great chance to meet people, both people that I know or admire from the guitar making industry, but or people I've met at these things in the past, but also these musicians. I mean, it's this crazy access to everybody you might care about in the world of guitars. I mean, I was thinking about last year walking into the Collings room. Mm-hmm. And there was like three people standing in there watching Julian Lage and the guy who I think is based in Chicago, who's like does that, it's like crazy Instagram videos of under the name Zeppelin Barnatra. Mm-hmm. Am I get that right?
You know what I'm talking about? I think so. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's like two, like as somebody I saw said in an Instagram comment, it was like, wow, two of the greatest living guitar players in one room. And the only other people in the room were like me and two other guys kind of standing around, you know? And So if you are there because you care about fine handcrafted guitars, you can, you know, there's all those poor people that are captive audience behind their table with their instruments. You can talk their ear off if you want, or play those instruments. Or if you like good musicians, you know, it's not a very big crowd. And there you are with Bill Frisell or Julian Lage or, you know, David Crosby or whoever else, you know. I mean, I sat two seats over from David Crosby watching Bill Frisell play at that first one, which is not something I can say about most Friday nights in my life. You know? So if I'm going to hype it up to someone who's never been there, it is this kind of like crazy access to musicians and guitar builders and people from that world. I mean, it's totally unlike going to a concert or going to a guitar show in that way. It's really everybody's sort of there all together. So it's pretty great. So I don't, living where I do and just out of my nature, I was going to like deep into doing this for a living before I started to actually meet other people who do the same thing, aside from Paul Languedoc, who you kindly chronicled in your magazine years ago. But so this is, for me, it's a great chance to go meet, you know, people I look up to or peers or people I've just met through these last few summits. And there's really no other way to, I mean, it's not only is it an easy way to do that, but it's this kind of like, there's so much going on. I mean, I've seen your lineup for this year. I can't believe you're going to fit all that into 3 days. There's so many amazing.
It's a problem.
I remember, having a meal with you at the end of the last one. And you're like, yeah, next year, maybe we'll leave a little more room for people to kind of like get out and explore. But when I see the roster for this year, people are going to have to make some hard choices between seeing like amazing thing A or amazing thing B that are probably happening at the same time. But that's a pretty good problem to have.
I think the best thing people can do is just cut class and maybe go take a friend to one of the restaurants featured in the Bay or something.
Right. Yeah. Sooner or later, everybody does have to eat. So
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches and, you know, and kind of crazy because it's not over. Like, it's, we're talking a month and a week out, and like, I just found out that Bob Taylor and Andy Powers are now showing up.
Right. Like, I know. It's the place to be.
Put them somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you have to start expanding. You have multiple campuses.
I guess so. Yeah. Well, do you want to, I'm embarrassed to bring it up, but, and I'm forever grateful that you and Duncan did what you did last year, but I had this crazy idea, and do you want to explain your side of the story?
I'd be happy to. Well, for me, it starts when I got a text message from you out of the blue, you know, probably sometime in spring, maybe, and saying, how long would it take you to put together a kit guitar, you know, if you were really under the gun, and I thought for about a second and a half, and I said, oh, maybe an hour if I was really rushing. And he said, okay, great, thanks. And then I didn't hear anything more for a while. And then the next thing I knew, I guess I was getting emails addressed to Duncan Price and myself and Meredith Coloma about this you know, this Iron Chef concept of taking a kind of cheap guitar kit and putting it together in an hour and see who comes out with the finest instrument at the end of that. And Meredith, alas, had to drop out. So it's just Duncan and I, who are two of maybe the least aggressive people you'll meet in this field. And Duncan, I think, is a real night owl. Like, you know, I think the competition started at 9. And I think when I first met him, he mumbled something about how he's usually, you know, just going to bed around that time. So yes, for him, he had the extra hurdle. Although he had the advantage of being able to drive there and bring a trunk load of tools. So I had to bring whatever I could sneak by in TSA and rely on you to bring that colossal router that I assembled. And then we met in the main theater there with an empaneled group of judges, which were Adam Miller from Australia, who proved himself to be a pretty good guitar player when he played these quasi unplayable guitars and sounded beautiful at the end. Joe Glazer from Nashville, and Josh Scott of JHS Pedals fame. And the bell rang and off we went. And that's the most intense hour of my life, I think, I've ever experienced. I'd spent weeks sort of budgeting, like, well, I have 10 minutes I can do this and then 15 minutes to do that. And I think I spent about half of my time just trying to get some wires that I'd added to fit in the cavities, you know, just sweating a celebrity guitar maker whose name I'm suddenly blanking on because I'm under the gun here.
Megan Wells,
of course. Yeah. It was not only good humored and encouraging, and also risked her life by acting as a human clamp sitting on the neck of the guitar while I had the head stuck. But she said, just hit it with a hammer. And I did, and suddenly it just popped right into place and I was able to move on. But that cost me a lot of the time I, you know, intended to spend on fretwork or something else. So, and I really, it came down, I just should pause to say, Duncan, anybody listening to this who doesn't know about Duncan Price should look him up, because I don't even fully really understand what that guy does for a day job. I mean, he fixes guitars and maybe amps as well in a guitar shop in somewhere in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yes.
But
this much we know about him. The rest, he's kind of
the rest is a mystery. I think he eats a lot of Mexican food, judging from his Instagram stories, but he's like a totally unique genius in guitar innovation. And I mean, he does all these fretless guitars with these sustainer pickups that he's making and like endlessly tinkering with that. But I hope this isn't spoiling any surprises. I mean, it's almost a year ago, but there I was trying to put together a playable guitar. Meanwhile, I look over there and Duncan is affixing what looks like a second neck to this guitar, but turns out to be a neck shaped bracket that holds a reverb tank that is somehow driven by outboard power source. So he built this guitar with built-in reverb, but that was also fretless and strong as a baritone, and seemed to do that with about 15 minutes to spare. So I was just like sweating and losing my mind, and he was already at the front of the stage playing his guitar and sort of showing it off. And there was the big, you know, the final 10-second countdown. And if not for Duncan's generosity, where he lent me his string winder, I never would have got the final string on. But I was tuning up the final string as the, you know, whatever the the flag was waved or the bell rang or whatever happened. It really was down to the wire, and I was completely exhausted. And the tables we worked with were quite low. I'm not sure what those tables were intended for, but they're certainly not meant for standing behind and building a guitar. And
I think they were like more picnic tables.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm sort of a rather tall fellow. So when I stood up at the end, my back just screamed. But there was a lengthy judging process, which included a phone call to George Gruen. Joe Glazer called George Gruen, who probably would have stayed on the phone all day with some slow deliberation until Joe cut him off. But then there was sort of a cryptic rubric for judging was invented on the spot. And mm-hmm. I don't know, you want to reveal who won or do I?
Go ahead. It's in the video.
Okay. Well, I'll cut to the chase and say that I was awarded the trophy. However, I think I was awarded the trophy because I made this sort of conventional playable guitar, and some of the stuff that the judges cooked up, not to like tip it in my favor, certainly, because I think they all sort of wanted Duncan to win, but by their own sort of hastily assembled rationale for, you know, the different judging categories, I emerged as the winner. However, it was a fairly hollow victory because this thing that Duncan created was like, I mean, I just made a guitar, you know, I made a couple twists on the basic.
You threw a third pickup.
I added a third pickup
and a baritone neck.
And it's baritone tuning. Well, same neck, but
yep.
Heavier strings, tuned low. So, you know, it was all right, but it was sort of a variation on like, it was like a really cheap version of a guitar that I might make anyway, you know. Meanwhile, Duncan was advancing, you know, the art of luthery and all of humanity and technology and art, you know, all at once. So so I took the trophy, and I really want to emphasize the trophy because we both were received these trophies made by a guy named, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tom Longobardi.
Yeah.
Who, if I'm not mistaken, made these things at a volunteer basis and drove them from Pittsburgh or Ohio. Like, he really like
Tom he, offered to build trophies. I thought they were going to be very low tech. He made this incredible creation that I think took him hundreds of hours.
That trophy that I have is so involved. And it's this beautiful like walnut case with like this gold. I mean, so many different materials and trays going into this thing. There's like cast acrylic, and it's illuminated, and there's this beautiful wood cabinet and gold leaf and metalwork. It's like, it's so involved. I mean, it must have taken him forever.
Yeah.
And I've been holding back on crowing about that trophy, not because of my own, you know, sense of victory, but because that guy needs some real credit until I mean, here we are, I guess, in July, and I don't think it's ever been fully made public who emerged victorious from that thing. But I certainly am the victor in that I have this amazing trophy, which whether or not my family likes it is in the middle of our dining room. And when we have guests over, and someone notices it, I leap from my chair and turn on the lights so it glows. And it's a low rectangular wooden base with this cast acrylic mountain emerging from it. And inside that, and it's like multi-dimensional casting. It's not just a flat object. And inside the clear mountain are all these guitar parts, capacitors and pots and stuff. And it all glows from within. It's really amazing. So thank you, Tom.
Yeah, Tom is too many projects on Instagram. I'll link to his Instagram so everybody can follow him.
Yeah, he seems like he could do or build just about anything.
Kind of a MacGyver. And you mentioned, just so I don't pass over it, you mentioned Meredith Coloma was originally going to be the third competitor, and then she couldn't make the trip. There was actually no room for a third competitor.
Yeah. It would have been snug. It would have been snug for sure.
We were all back of napkining this, or I was, trying to figure out this venue that's 2,000 miles away from me.
Yeah.
And there's no room for a third competitor.
The problem really with her withdrawal was that, but you know, Duncan and I in our sort of sidebar conversation were just like so happy that she was going to come and would clearly just win, you know, just walk all over us. And that was sort of fine with both of us. And then she dropped out and it was these like sort of two nice guys shrugging thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, we'd be friends, but it was a real pleasure to get to know Duncan, who's a super interesting guy and super talented guy. And I think is going to be at this next summit, if I'm not mistaken.
I am pretty sure he's coming. I think a lot of folks discovered Duncan, or at least the folks at the summit, through that appearance, and now follow him. And, you know, I mean, Duncan's creations, Mason Stoops is playing one. I just saw Blake Mills with one.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild to see what he's up to. And that guitar that started out as the Stumac kit from the summit, I think he's still routing it, and it's still like his Les Paul test guitar.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It seems like he's got and the blue guitar that he brought along last year that everybody was enthralled by, this fretless sustaining guitar. Like, it seems like every time I look at my phone, he's, you know, ripping it apart and putting it back together. So he definitely, as you say, like, I don't know what he's working toward exactly, but he does seem to be endlessly curious and inventive, and, you know,
a damn good player.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very good.
Like, making music that on these creations that no one else could make.
Yeah. And I don't know if you tried playing that fretless guitar, but I mean, it was really cool. I mean, you could see, like, right away you could do something cool musical with it, but it's definitely tricky and weird. I mean, if you've never played anything like that before, and he plays it so beautifully. It's like, I don't know, the master of a non-existent instrument, or the instrument that only exists when he decides to make one or something.
Yeah.
Cool guy.
So, Creston, we're talking July 13th. Summit's a week and a month away. As of right now, you just get to come to Chicago and relax.
Oh, yeah? Not going to put me to work?
I mean, I could.
Well, you better give me an excuse to go out there so I can write it off or something.
Okay. We'll put you to work.
No, I'm excited. I know I'm bunking with my friend Chris Benson of Benson Amps, who I'm excited to see. So just having him there is a cool attraction for anybody who is a fan of his amps, which is pretty much everybody as far as I can tell. And I'm very excited to see Bill Frizzell again. I mean, I guess if you want some testimony, I met Bill at that first summit. We sort of became pals there. So that's, you know, you want to be friends with Bill Frizzell, attend a
tickets are Smith, I only guess. $350. You can befriend Bill Frizzell. Yeah,
I know, it's a small price to pay. And I guess this year you get to play with him as well, right? Like, and then you can.
There is the Bill Frizzell Orchestra that anyone can join. Yeah, I don't fully know. Much like the nickel wound chef, I don't fully know what will unfold, but that's how it's going.
Something will. Yeah, and then everybody can, you know, brag to their friends that they're part of the Bill Frizzell combo.
Yeah, exactly. Take home an MP3.
Yeah. No, it's a cool event. And it's I think I've learned last year there was a bunch of people there who I wish I had met, who I didn't even sort of realize were there. And I also learned about a bunch of builders I'd never heard of who were building some really, really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So no reason not to go, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Thank you. It's fun. It's inspiring, and it's cool to just see you and everyone else, all the Summit and Fretboard Journal regulars, and the postscript on the game show of last year is Judge Josh Scott has taken the torch and run with it and is doing the Germanium Chef this year, and Chris Benson's one of the judges. I think that's official. And it's Robert Keeley against Heather Brown building a fuzz pedal in an hour, which frankly seems a lot easier than building an actual guitar in an hour.
Well, we'll see. Having never done it, that's my assumption too. But, you know, yeah, I guess I can really puff out my chest and harumph from the upper balcony.
And what is that? 30 solder joints?
I'll give me a break.
At most?
I do that in the guitar. No, that's cool. And if I'm not mistaken, did Heather Brown used to work for Robert Keeley at one point?
Yeah.
So it's
like rags. It's like a Hollywood.
Yeah, that's script. Great. That's like some sort of Karate Kid situation, I guess. I mean, that's great. But I know both people are well respected in their peddly world. So it should be an event. And I'm sure even if it's as dry as a bone, Josh will make it interesting in his emceeing. His talk at the last summit, which I don't know if that's ever going to see the light of day in a public way, or if you had to be there, but that was a completely fascinating talk he gave about the sort of his, it's really, I don't know if it was all sort of hung on the fuzz face, but it was sort of Chicago's influence on the world of guitars, but sort of specifically effects, and this like this really like wide reaching, really memorable, cool talk.
That was like a TED talk. It was great. And we did tape it. And then I asked him if he wanted us to share it. And he said that he's going to refine it and probably put it out on his own. So somebody should stay tuned for that at some point.
Yeah. He made all the slides. You can't just leave them inside a hard drive somewhere forever. They got to see the light of day.
Yeah. I did suggest to him that you and Duncan should be up in the balcony, like the two grumpy Muppets, commentating on what's going down with the fuzz pedal build off. But we'll see if that happens.
I feel like I was born to do that. We'll be there one way or another, whether or not we have a microphone anywhere near us. I'll be paying close attention.
Well, before you go, what's new at Creston Guitars?
Well, what's new here is that I guess, you know, last time we spoke, which was probably about a year ago, I was sort of, you were asking me my whole process, which involved relying heavily on my former neighbors at Allied Lutheran to do CNC work for me. Mm-hmm. They really outgrew their capacity to do that stuff for me pretty shortly after I said all that on the mic. It's felt good. I'm sort of bringing a lot of stuff back in house, which feels like back to my roots. And it actually feels really nice to just be sort of quietly working on my own here doing that. So I'm things have slowed down a lot since COVID. And that's, you know, doing the great guitar boom of like 2020 to late 2022. That, you know, so I'm sort of back to normal, which also feels a little more relaxed and good. So I'm just sort of enjoying being here. And I've been sort of in each bat, you know, I build guitars in batches of about five or six. And I've been kind of with each batch lately making an extra guitar just to sort of work out an idea I have or use some kind of wood I'm thinking about. And I've got a bunch of wood here that I've been sort of, you know, that's like wood too good to use, you know, I'm just otherwise going to sit on a shelf till I retire or croak or whatever. So I'm bringing myself to sort of trot some of that stuff out. And, you know, I've been building these sort of custom unique one-off guitars since I started. So sometimes I make a guitar that I think is really cool and kind of sits around here. Mm-hmm. I assume, you know, if it were me, if I were on the outside, I'd want to buy it up that afternoon, but sometimes stuff sits around for a little while. So it's always a little bit, I go into these kind of like extra sort of spec guitars with all this enthusiasm and then I, you know, put them online or something and they sit for 24 hours and I start crying into my beer that everybody hates me or something because I'm so excited about it.
Oh, they sell though.
They do eventually sell. Yeah. So I guess, you know, if you're intrigued, keep an eye on it because I am sort of, I just made a guitar sort of in the Rycooter tradition, which I'm hardly the first to do, but using these Mojo pickups made in the UK with like a Bigsby lap steel pickup and a Guyatone style neck pickup. That was like such a cool guitar. So it's stuff like that. You know, I've been curious about these pickups. So I built a guitar to try them out and then someone snapped them right up. But so it's been kind of a fun thing to just kind of continue with the custom instruments, which is sort of what I've always done. And then doing these sort of extras that are kind of custom made for me, but then I sell them.
Yeah. You said you've been sitting on woods that are too good to use. Now you're not a guy who uses like the tree or Brazilian rosewood or figured whatever. So what woods are too good for you to use?
Well, I have a piece of maple that Ruben Cox gave me. You know, Ruben Cox who I met at a Fretboard Journal Guitar Summit. I was out visiting him one time and he gave me this really cool piece of maple with sort of interesting history, which I guess I'll sit on for now. But that's just been sort of sitting here staring me in the face every day. So I think it's big enough to make two necks. So I think that's something. And I have some just incredibly, incredibly lightweight ash that similar but different history. But I keep thinking it'd be cool to marry those two woods together. So I'll make a couple of guitars with that stuff. Both of which have sort of interesting history. That came from the collections of interesting people, both in California. So it'll be my Vermont version of this California guitar. That's a couple of things I'm thinking about. And then also I've been making all these B bender guitars, which is fun for me because I like B bender guitars and I don't do anything. I don't deal with the B bender installation or manufacture myself, but I've been working with Gene Parsons for years on those, and he's sort of getting to the end of his career. I think he's sort of getting ready to sell the business, retire. So, and I totally adore him as a guy, and he does beautiful work. So, he's got a couple ready that he's about to send back to me. And also my new friend, Joe Glazer, who I met when I was struggling to put that guitar together for an hour at the last summit, I'm about to send him another one too. So there's some kind of cool like B bender trend happening right now, which I applaud because I think they're a cool thing.
So how does that work? Do you get specs on like how much to route out for that? And then you just send the body? How does it go?
No, I send Gene a totally finished guitar and he routes it out, which is, I'm so glad I don't have to do that. Cause I mean, in the case of, you know, these guitars are beautifully painted by Sarah Ryan and he's got two of those right now. So he has to, and she just sort of paints the whole back because it's too tricky to guess exactly where the route is. So he's got to cut into that. And with us, you know, without any finish flaking or anything else. And it's a pretty large and deep and precise route with like different depths within it that he coats with different color flocking. And then there's a very precise, slightly angled, round route on the top for the turret that actually does the string bending. So it seems like there's about 100 million things that could go wrong, but he's also been doing it since, you know, I don't know how long he's doing professionally, since 1970 or so. I mean, I don't know when he did that initial one for Clarence White. And then the Glazer one is all kind of internal. So the bender mechanism, the levers actually sits on the neck plate of like a Fender style guitar. Mm-hmm. And then, and it's all underneath the bridge and kind of hidden beneath. I actually don't know how it works specifically, but same deal. I send them a complete guitar and they do the work and I get it back. It's cool.
Going back to the Parsons, that is crazy that it's a finished guitar.
Yeah.
And so nerve wracking that like Sarah Ryan's done her magic. You've done your magic.
Yeah. So far so good. I mean, he's done maybe, I don't know. I think the first one I sent him was in 2009 or 10. And he's, I don't know, maybe done 15 or 20 of them in all.
And is that how he likes to do it? Or do some people send him a raw body and neck and then do their magic after?
I mean, I may be wrong, but I think that he does it all. I think that's how he wants to do it. There was talk at one point of me sending him like a, you know, sending the body, him sending it back, me finishing the guitar, sending the whole thing. But we've never actually done that. So he's, you know, he's been doing it a long time. I don't know how old Gene is. He's in his mid-70s anyway. But he's, you know, he's a very precision oriented guy. I mean, the machining in those devices is so beautiful. It's really immaculate.
Yeah.
And you know, he was a bird. It's like very thrilling to work with this guy who's just a great guy, but he also has this incredible history in the world of music. You know, it's like the biggest band in the world at the time that he was playing with them. So.
Incredible.
As chronicled in the Fretboard Journal. Yes. I recall.
Before he retires, somebody get over there and film him routing into a finished guitar. It'll horrify all of us, but it'll go viral.
And I don't know how much, I assume the neck comes off. I don't know. I don't think he completely disassembles the guitar, you know, the electronics and everything. I think he's got it all rigged up. So once the back is in his jig, he can do what he needs to do, but I don't know the process, but it's really cool. It's not cheap and he's not what I would describe as super fast, but there's only one Gene Parsons and, you know, he is nearing the end of his career. So I'm trying to encourage anybody who's on the fence to get one now.
Yeah. And, the Glazer Bender version, is that do similar thing or does that, I don't even know.
Yeah, effectively, I mean, it does the same thing, which is just pull the B string a whole step sharp. But the mechanism is completely different. And I think in talking to Joe, I think he was, he kind of comes from the world of pedal steel. I think he's a pedal steel player himself. So the way the mechanism is more akin to that. And I think I don't think he would mind me saying that when I met him in Chicago last year, I think he said he was trying to give Gene plenty of elbow room to not trot on his territory. So I don't think Gene invented the concept of a B bender guitar. I think he just is the guy who sort of got there first. But he is the guy.
All right. So we should all be following you to see these guitars on spec, including the Mystery Woods coming soon.
Here they come. Yeah. Like sort of one at a time, I think until, until I get distracted by something else.
Kristen,
which is likely.
Thank you as always for
likewise
talking to us and being part of our community.
Yeah, well, it's been a total joy. I think this is my fourth Fretboard Journal podcast appearance too. Does that mean that I get to thumb my nose at TJ Thompson yet, or is he still the king?
You're in the gold microphone club, whatever that means. Right. I don't know. We'll come up with some tier system. Yeah.
Well, no, it's really been, as I say, I really, prior to these summits that you put together, I really knew so few people in the world of guitars. I just really, was kind of in my own little world. So it's been, if not for these, that would still be the case. So it's been really great to meet so many cool people. And it's not like an exclusive thing for other people who are in it professionally as builders. I mean, any guest has the same access I do to all these people. So
that is the cool thing, is it's, if you want to just get out, I know most of us are pretty introverted and just kind of like to, hold our beer and sit in the corner. But if you want to go introduce yourself, it is the perfect spot to go, meet the crew from Callings Bob Taylor, anyone, you.
It's
everyone's there for the same reason. It's really fun.
Indeed. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you there in just a few weeks.
All right. So that was my conversation with Kristen. Now I'm going to switch gears for a second, and we're going to talk to Micah Bruce in Omaha, Nebraska, who builds just incredible acoustics and electrics. If you haven't been following this guy, you need to. He used to work for Callings. He came to the Fretboard Summit last year. I got to know him. He's building a guitar that someone is going to go home with at the Fretboard Summit. And he's one of my favorite people. I will say this interview took place a month or two ago, and so there's been a ton of progress made on this guitar. Follow Micah on Instagram to see what he's up to. It's going to be incredible. Here is my interview. Micah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Jason.
You are in your new shop in Omaha, and again, a lot of beautiful guitars in the background there. How are things?
Things are good. Things are, quite busy, which is good, but I'm bad at time management, and it's hard to get to everything. That's, I guess that's what life is like.
Perfect segue to you volunteering to offer this guitar for the Fretboard Summit. Well, but before we get to that, what are you working on? Is it customer commissions? Is it stuff you're just building on spec? Like, what's the mix look like?
Oh, a little of everything. I'm kind of half and half repair and build. Mm-hmm. So plenty of repair work. I just did a restoration on a 1967 Martin D28. This dude found at an antique store, and it was hanging on the wall with no top, no fretboard, no tuners. And somebody had books stacked in it, like decoration.
Of course.
And he does a double take, looks at the neck block and realizes this is a Martin, bought it for $100. And so I made a new top for it, a new fretboard. It did all kinds of stuff to it. I need to do a little post on that, actually.
Yeah. How did it turn out? Don't leave us hanging.
Right. He just picked it up on Saturday. Turned out awesome. I totally will put, I'll put some pictures out there, and it sounded awesome. I mean, it was a new top, brand new top.
Sure.
Who knows how long it had been like that. It sounded like a Martin Dreadnought. I don't know that it sounded vintage totally all the way, but yeah, it turned out great. I aged the top a little bit without going too far.
Was it an old spruce top or was it a newer cut one?
It was newer. I was thinking about doing Torify, but I decided against that just to, keep it original spec as possible. I don't know how old the top was actually, but I mean, I bought it from a luthier supply company.
Yeah. Now, aside from the mojo and the visuals of that old back and sides, like, if you're being perfectly honest, I'm sure that was a pain in the ass to do versus just building a guitar from scratch. Yeah,
totally.
Did it sound a little bit older than if you just made a brand new guitar and tried to make it sound old?
I think so. I mean, it's so subjective, tone is, but it for sure sounded you know, like a Brazilian Rosewood Dreadnought, that already is in its own, okay, this category of sound. The neck, you know, dovetail neck and the metal T-bar and all of that is old. Had a new fretboard. And then the top, I copied the bracing pretty closely. I had a 1965, so just 2 years away, another one that I was doing a neck set on. So I took super careful measurements of the braces, the layout, the dimensions. And yeah, I think it sounded old, but definitely not nearly the same as a 60s Martin with its original top, for sure. But it didn't sound new either. Kind of hybrid.
Was that more work than building a guitar from scratch?
Yeah.
Did it cost more for the client?
That's a good question. It was probably a similar amount. It was less than if I built a Brazilian guitar. So sure. Materials aside, in terms of what I make, like in terms of profit on a guitar, yeah, it was pretty similar actually, because the labor was basically the same or more, because I got to be careful with, you know, preserving as much finish as I can. It had some cracks and things, and yeah. It was fun though. I hope to do more like that. I've got a couple other, I have three or four other Martins that I've bought that are kind of these basket case.
Yeah.
Do I retop it or salvage the top it's got? I don't know.
Yeah, that is the luthier's conundrum. I think I've been in every guitar maker's shop I've been in. There's like one or two really cool relics hanging, and they never really pencil out, I think, financially, but it'd be cool to bring them back from the dead.
Total. Well, that's why those in particular, that's why I have them. It was, okay, is this worth fixing? I don't know. Well, somebody should do something with it. Why don't I just buy it and figure that out later?
And yeah, here you are.
Maybe that'll be my retirement project when I finally have time, which probably will be never.
Yeah, but what's retirement?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'll never stop. Like, I'll always be, but I might spend a little less time with less urgency.
Yeah. What are you bringing? This Fretboard Summit happening in August. It's coming up. It's only a few months away.
We gotta
hurry up.
What is coming up?
Besides the guitar in question that we're going to be talking about, what else do you know what you're bringing?
Yeah, I'm going to bring, I've got a couple tellies that I've got cooking. I am building a baritone. It's basically a jumbo baritone guitar. I'm not sure I'm going to have it finished or not. I'm going to try so that I can bring it along. And that's a commission build for a client, and hopefully one other acoustic, either an OM or single O, which we'll see. If in addition to the guitar that I'm going to give away, I'll probably build another one to have for sale, but I don't know. Time is running out, so I'm not sure I'll be able to accomplish all of that.
A jumbo baritone, does that change everything in terms of the guts and the bracing?
Totally. Well, yes and no. Like it changes everything in some ways, because you've got heavier strings. But at the same time, the tension is not profoundly different. Like on a 12 string, you've got quite a bit more tension. A baritone is not so much more force. It's just a different kind of force. The string, like the mass of the string itself, that low B string, it has a greater mass. And so that's how I've been kind of conceptualizing it in my mind. How would I voice a top with when the strings are maybe the same tension, but different properties and in a different range of the frequency, you go way lower. I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I haven't done one. And I was a little hesitant to even take it on. It's hard to say no to a fun project, but
yeah. Well, especially too, if it's a commission, you know, a client is, it's got to be flattering when a client trusts you and like, no, you're going to do great with this.
Yeah, it's flattering. And also I feel pressure, you know, well, they've seen me do good things before. I better deliver. And
sure.
That's tough.
I guess the good thing in your favor is there really isn't a gold standard jumbo baritone that I've heard of.
This is true. That is definitely a saving grace. There's not a lot to compare it to. It also has this super wide nut width. And okay. Like this guy, he's just a really tall, really big hands.
Okay.
It's really going to suit him. But that's another element that's, you really want, I mean, it's nearly 2 inch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we have it drawn out. We measured some things. That's going to be quite the build. So yeah, I may or may not have it
2x4 there and call it right.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow. All right. Well, we talked about this Summit guitar a few months ago. And one thing that you mentioned that was intriguing was you were kind of thinking about the Harmony H49 mm-hmm. Jupiter Stratotone. You still thinking about that?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. I had done a couple sketches I have a little sketchbook. I'm not much of an artist actually, but it helps me think. And I had drawn out the H49 prior to that, like last year sometime. And it keeps coming to mind. And then we talked about it at the last podcast. And now I've kind of been set on it.
Yeah, I have too. And we have not talked about this really. When you look at those guitars, I mean, I'll be honest, that H49 Jupiter, the kind of more, not the peanut shaped Stratotone, is like not the most beautifully aesthetic guitar to me visually.
Yeah.
But everybody loves it and everybody loves how they sound.
Yeah.
And I think there is something intriguing about the hollow body nature that someone like yourself, who's built both acoustics and electrics, might be able to tweak or put your own personal spin on it. Is that kind of where your head is at too?
Yeah, okay. Definitely. The hollow body, it offers so many possibilities and, you know, things to have iterations of. Try X brace or parallel brace or lattice or put a center block in it. And the aesthetics, it's not the most beautiful, but it's so cool. And that's part of the challenge of like, how do you, you know, kind of make it clearly an homage to that model without corrupting the cool factor by making it too cool looking. And, yeah.
It has to look sort of awkward.
It has a squarish, like it kind of a little Telecaster body is like, it's just kind of like, if you think of curves of a body, like feminine or masculine, like a Tele's kind of squarish looking.
Sure.
And it has a little bit of that going on where it's curvy, but it's not super curvy like a Les Paul.
Yes. And for folks who have no idea what we're talking about, it's sort of a spruce top, flat back top as well. Harmony built, Chicago made, which we love.
Yeah.
I actually thought last night when I couldn't sleep, I'm like, maybe we call it the Summit Tone, which is pretty cheesy, but I like it.
It's like the Stratotone with the Summit Tone.
What you've done a lot of repair work and presumably have gone inside one of those. Like, what is it? I tried to find this online. If the top were to come off that thing, like, what does it actually look like? Like, how hollow is it? How chambered is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's all the way. The top and back are laminate. It's got this huge pick guard. Well, it's not huge, but like it's on the top. So there's got a big hole there for the controls, but the and I'm tapping on it.
Yeah.
All the way hollow. It has a block and the sides, I believe, are laminate and they're bent and curved like a, like an acoustic. So you could kind of approach it a couple different ways of making the body out of like hollowing out a solid body, mm-hmm. or just doing totally all the way, bend the sides and everything. And it's bolt on, double bound. And then you got holes for the pickups and then the bridge, a trapeze tailpiece, floating bridge. And the circuitry is a little bit weird. Okay. I still don't know how it really works.
You got a lot of knobs there.
Pickup selector and the blend knob that they advertised and like, oh, it was this newfangled way of this blend circuit. It doesn't really work all that. I don't know if this one's broken or what, but yeah. It doesn't sound very good to me.
Yeah.
When you use the blend knob. But yeah, it's sweet that it's spruce, but it's laminate. So it's the spruce is just a thin layer, but that's kind of, I don't know what makes it look so cool. Cause you see that on acoustics and not as much on electrics. And so that's one of the compelling things to me is, all right, incorporating acoustic things in electric, yeah. but not making it a dumb acoustic electric, not to name any names.
I guess, because you were talking about the Martin restoration, like I didn't realize the laminated top, but would you just use a spruce top that was meant for an acoustic on this? Like, or do you have to go at it from a completely different angle?
You could. I'm thinking I'll probably do some kind of sandwich lamination of, I don't know, birch or maple to like... There's part of, if you do the totally solid top, totally possible. I think it's going to be a little too acoustic-y and I don't know, feedback and I don't know, something about laminating, it feels more sound. And, but you totally could do solid spruce top. That would be viable. I'm thinking more laminate just, so it's not too resonant and it's going to be just a feedback machine.
Yeah. And you said birch as part of the laminate. Birch was one of the woods like primarily used by the Chicago makers back in the day. And now basically no one uses it.
Yeah.
Can you get guitar shaped birch still? Like, I don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it like marketed to luthiers, but Totally can. It's, you can get it a lot. Like if you go into the laminating world, people are using it for drum shells or skateboard decks, furniture making.
Sure.
It's a really common veneer ply that you can buy. And, or even like amplifier cabinets, speaker cabinets are using nice birch in the ply, but I don't know why it fell out of favor. Probably just marketing, really. It's too ordinary. So, hey, we can use this other stuff. So let's do that.
Yeah, nobody uses. I mean, I'm sure somebody out there has made an acoustic guitar with birch lately.
Definitely.
But I have not seen that guitar.
I haven't either. You know, have you heard of Wandering Boy guitars?
I've got one here. Yeah.
Not like this is an advertisement.
They've
for
been on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm a fan. I admire, that seems like something I bet that they have built.
Jack has probably built. Yes, you're right. You're right.
I don't know, but I suspect.
Yes. Birch brought in from America, the cheapest wood, all the way to Australia so that he could do his 20s recreation of it. But that's how the world works these days.
Uh-huh.
Have you thought about the ultimate Harmony Stratotone? Is it Jupiter Stratotone? Stratotone Jupiter? I guess it doesn't matter. Back and sides. Like where do you want to go with this?
I'm thinking mahogany, but the maple is a lighter color. Like if I do a sunburst on the back, But I don't know. I really like mahogany. It's just nice to work with. I haven't decided though. If I did the back also as a laminate, then I'd do maple. But I'm thinking about like the Collings I-35 starts as a slab of mahogany and gets completely hollowed out and carved. Well, not there's a center block, but it's at first glance, it looks like a carved top and back onto a rim, but it's not. And, you know, partly I saw that happen. I think it's a good design. So it's just in my mind already. Or partly it might be less work than bending a whole rim and kerfing the lining. Mm. And, you know, it'd be a different tone, a different weight. But I'm trying to think ahead of not just this one guitar, but as I make more of them, I want to tee myself up for a good process to make, you know, manufacture a guitar. I'm rambling. If I do that, I'll do mahogany. But if I decide, no, I'm going to bend a rim and do kerfing, then I'll do maple. And then the neck, I would match whichever. If I did mahogany, I'd do a mahogany neck. Or if I did maple, do a maple neck.
I just want you to elaborate on that for a second, because I guess from a civilian non-luthier perspective, the thought of like getting a single slab of wood and perfectly hollowing it out to like a canoe or something
yeah.
to make a guitar back inside sounds like it maybe should be harder than making a mold and building the back and sides and gluing them together. But is one easier than the other, or is it just two completely different paths?
That's a good question. I mean, they both have their challenges, but with a CNC machine, I can program a hollowing tool path and say it takes an hour, mm-hmm. which would run for a while. Well, it's not an hour that I have to sit in that machine and hog out material. I can run the machine and then go do something else.
Mm-hmm. I guess I didn't think of that. Yeah. I think of me with like a drill bit going through the guitar body because I'm klutzy. Uh-huh. And you don't have to worry about that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, things can go wrong. But yeah, with the CNC, that's where my head goes. Hollowing out a slab because I can automate that. Whereas if you're bending it in a mold, okay, you didn't have to hollow it out, but it was a lot more fiddling around and more man hours. And I'll use my machine hours.
Yeah. And this is a guitar that, I mean, you love it, but it's not a commonly molded, like, I'm guessing you don't have a mold ready for this guitar shape.
I don't, although even my, you know, I've made the molds for all of my acoustics and I made the bending jig. So I still like to do an OM, but make it my OM mold or do it, whatever body it is. So I'm not opposed to making molds. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I may change my mind because I've seen like people have been laminating sides for acoustics. It's, I wouldn't say it's a trend necessarily, but I'm seeing it more.
Sure.
And that intrigues me a little bit to try to develop that process, which this could be a good project to kind of R&D the concept of, all right, put a vacuum bag and sandwich these wood to bend laminated sides. And then that voice in my head's like, dude, this isn't a couple months.
Yeah. 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 I was going to say, let's make this easy on you.
Consider that. But I get so excited. Like that's part of why this, you know, line of work is so fun is it's, you get to just geek out on whatever you're doing. And it's an opportunity to just continue to push yourself and push the materials and the limits of what you can do.
Is there a part of you when you think about this stuff and I totally see where your head is going, but is there also a part of you that's like, this is going to be more work and R&D, and the customer looking at my website or seeing this at a guitar show is going to go, well, this is laminated, so it shouldn't cost as much as the solid piece of mahogany.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you can't use that word. Like, I need another word, like a, I can't even think of another word for laminate, pressed, sandwiched. That sounds better in marketing.
Whatever it is in French.
There maybe. We go. There we go. Or yeah, veneer, even the word veneer is,
yeah,
like that just sounds cheap, even though that doesn't mean it's cheap at all. You could have a Brazilian rosewood veneer on a nice guitar. Yeah, the laminate, definitely. All the marketing.
Yeah. Well, you, all right, you've got a tight deadline. You have,
it's creeping up.
Yeah. A family to feed. Can you get started on this without knowing the electronics?
Yes, I can. I'm going to make, I'm not going to put a center block in it, but I am going to make sure there's enough meat there that it could be a different mount than a surface mount. That,
okay. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking, easy for me to say with it being semi-hollow body, like maybe someone like Duncan or someone could, or you could do something unique under the hood that's not even visible, like a third pickup.
I've already have that idea. Did I tell you about that?
No. It's just great minds thinking alike.
It is.
So people procrastinating on real work, thinking about weird shit.
Oh my goodness. That is definitely a problem I have. But you got to dream a little, but you got to get work done. So I'm going to put a pickup under the bridge. I'm going to put a K&K pickup under it. And I'm really curious because the top is going to be thicker than, you know, a acoustic top and a bridge plate. So I'm not sure how much signal it's going to get, but we're going to see. So yeah, that's going to be in there, and I'm going to see what it sounds like. I think what I'm going to do is put it on a blend knob, kind of again, like with the harmony blend knob in mind, but do it with a totally different purpose in mind, to have, like, basically if you had it all the way the one direction, you'd just be getting the acoustic pickup, and then you could put it all the way the other direction, it's ignoring the acoustic pickup altogether. And then in between, some interesting things could happen. And I don't know if it's going to be useful or not. I think it will be. And I'm excited to have one of my own, because that's kind of how I play music. I'm really acoustic guitar is my first love, but I play a lot more electric recently. And yeah, trying to find that tone where I still just, my hands play like an acoustic player, but I'm wanting electric tone. Although it's been done before, I've looked into the, who makes the one that, what I don't like about all of the acoustic electric hybrids is that they're all under saddle pickups and the bridges are acoustic guitar bridges, or they're like a ghost system where the saddle, they don't sound good. And if it has an acoustic bridge on it, it doesn't look good. And so this is my attempt at, like, other people want this too. So they've made these guitars. It's not like we're the first ones to think of this.
Sure.
But why don't I like those ones? And that's at least how I've thought about it. I don't like electric guitar hardware with pickups in them. They just sound brittle and thin and stupid. And then acoustic guitar bridge on electric looks stupid.
Sure.
So
where are you going to go with this? I'm dying to know. Is it going to be a wooden bridge or a metal bridge or a rubber bridge? I mean, it could be anything these days.
I know. Probably wood. And like, I'm going to prototype where to put the pickup before I like do finish work on it. So okay. like I'll string it up in the white and see like, okay, I could embed the pickups like in a laminated layer, which sounds kind of risky. Like what if they get damaged? You can't ever extract them. I could make a bridge. It's the bridge itself could have the pickups on it. Like I really like K and K pickups. That's just my personal preference on acoustics. And they make pickups for orchestral instruments and pickups that you could fasten it, like the upright bass one I have in my mind where it's on the bridge itself. So you could make it being a floating bridge with a trapeze tailpiece, you could make a bridge with the K&K pickup on like the bridge itself, which could be interesting to try. That would be the most direct signal, or put it inside where you're going to get a lot more different resonance from the body, maybe more feedback. I don't know. It's exciting to R&D
decisions here. Yeah,
I know. And then again, it's like, okay, with this timeline, is that wise to be fiddling with?
All right. Yeah, no, it's not. It's not at all.
No, it's not at all. You're right. But it's fun.
Sure. as always, none of you ever email me. I mean, you do for the AMP podcast. But if anybody out there wants to chime in on this podcast at fretboardjournal.com, you can tell us your thoughts. Obviously, when you think about refined takes of like old harmonies, Joe Yanuziello is a huge inspiration. Oh, I think like he's kind of taken it up a notch, to say the least.
Is there next otherworldly?
Yeah. Yeah. He told me he's coming to the 2024 Fretboard Summit. So,
oh, I was going to say
this, your calendars.
Okay, next. Okay.
No, he couldn't come this year. There was something else going on, but that would be amazing. So, in the next week or so, you're going to make some executive decisions on this guitar. Mm-hmm. The Bruce Summit Tone.
Summit Tone. Semitone? Summit Tone.
Summit Tone. Rolls off the tongue. We can talk aesthetics later, but I can tell you that some Fretboard Summit branding is going on that is incorporating the Chicago Stars, which I didn't even know was a thing. But it's a thing very important to Chicago, and it's a star shape. You can Wikipedia it. So there's room for fun there on the headstock or inlays, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or not. You only got 3 months. I'm not.
I'd like to do some inlays tastefully. You know, I don't want
tasteful inlays. My last question for you is just, you know, if you do this like one piece mahogany thing, is that plentiful? Is there like one thick enough mahogany floating around for guitars? I just assume all these woods are like so hard to get and unobtainium.
Well, I mean, when you're just buying a few of them,
yeah,
you could totally get it. And the unit price might not be great. And that's, I don't know, when you hear about the scarcity of wood, when like Taylor and Martin talk about it, it sounds really scary. And like, I'm not saying it's not a concern of mine.
Sure.
But when I'm just buying a few things here and there, I get to just pick whatever I want. You know, I don't have to try to buy 1,000 of them or 10, I don't even know, 10,000 body blanks. So yes, I can get a few, but yeah, I don't know. The whole wood conversation is a whole nother topic that it's something that's real. I mean, we need to steward our resources well.
And I guess when you do this CNC thing, you don't get to do anything with the wood that comes out, right? It's just shavings. Right.
Yeah, that is one bummer of carving any wood. The floor has just piles of shavings on it. And then it's like, well, could I have saved this? You can't just smelt it back down and put it in the next batch. It's like, it's done. And yeah, what do you do about that?
Is there a way to, I guess there isn't a way to program a CNC where you could take a neck plate out or like slice out a good piece of it before it ends up in sawdust?
It would depend on the approach. If you just cut out it's like, say you cut it from the slab, you cut it more like a rim. So you would have an inner piece of the, like if it was a cookie cutter,
yeah,
you'd have the middle piece. And if you had a slightly larger cookie cutter, a middle piece and then a rim. So that middle could be repurposed to make neck blocks for acoustic bodies or,
got it.
I don't know, something.
But it's a fair amount of work, it sounds like.
Yeah, but it's not a deal breaker because I've thought about that. It does make, if you're comparing, okay, do you bend the sides or do you hog out the material? That is a real consideration of how wasteful it is just blasting it all into dust.
Sure. And how easy is it for you as a, I guess I just think of this stuff as all like so overwhelmingly daunting to me, but like as a sole proprietor of a guitar shop, are you pretty quick with CNC programming now where you can just kind of hammer it out? This is all so different for like, you know, I think we all picture Geppetto in his workshop, you know, with the,
yeah,
the chisel or whatever.
I'm pretty quick now. I've spent a lot of time on it. It depends on how amazing you want your model to be in CAD. Cause if you just need it to be like a crude, just give me the shape 60% of what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. That's pretty easy to draw up. If you want it to just come off the machine and you just want to barely sand it and call it good, you've really got to have a nice model in the computer. Hmm. But for two-dimensional, you know, when you look at a guitar body from the top view, like a Strat, for example, mm-hmm, you've got the outline, you've got the cavity, the neck pocket. Those are just, I mean, a two-dimensional shape. In the CNC world, you would call it like 2.5D, where it's three-dimensional. But really, you just need a two-dimensional drawing, and then you tell it the depth. That's like the 0.5.
Sure. Just go straight down. Don't do an angle. Don't do any
exactly.
Curves. Yeah.
That's super easy. I mean, you could have a guitar body cranked out, brand new model that's never been done before. You could draw that in an hour, and that's easy. But as soon as you start doing a three-dimensional, all right, now the arm bevels or like the belly cut, or this is an organic neck shape.
Yeah.
That's a lot more challenging to draw.
And as somebody who's worked in like small shops, big shops, independent shop now, is there like one program that everybody seems to use for drawing?
There's a couple of main ones. I use Rhino, Rhinoceros. Rhino Cam, and then it has a plugin, or Rhino CAD has a plugin, Rhino Cam, and that's kind of communicates with the machine itself. Fusion 360 is another one. Those two are probably the most prevalent that I see. But the really big shops will use SolidWorks and the Autodesk suite, where it's just super, it's unbelievably expensive. Like, okay, to get a license for it is like $20,000 or something. Just,
okay.
And then they annually want to chart. Who can afford this? I can't. So that's why I went with Rhino. And it's not cheap, but in comparison, it's way cheaper. And but yeah, a lot of the small shops, Fusion 360 or Rhino.
And is there some stuff that those programs can't do that the really, really expensive program can do?
Yeah. I mean, you get really into the tedium of, it depends on what your machine is, that a lot of the big machines have auto tool changers and they have different fixtures and setups, and you can get into the minutia of, yeah, how fast is the bit spinning? They can do crazy parameters.
Okay. Well, thanks for the 101 on that.
I'm resisting getting into the, like, there's so, it's like, I wouldn't even know what the features are that I don't have, but if I saw them, it's like, wow. If you want to refine get that last little bit of efficiency from your program, then yeah.
I was on another podcast, Crafted, that's, they interviewed me and they tried to get me to like explain the entire guitar industry in an hour, acoustic and electric. And I didn't do a great job, but that is one thing that I feel like in the last, you know, I feel like when the Fretboard Journal started 18 years ago, CNCs weren't really talked about or were downplayed. Mm-hmm. And now, fast forward almost two decades, I feel like small shops are embracing them. And it's like, hey, yeah, I'm able to make a high quality guitar thanks to a little help from this up front.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody talked about that 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is relatively recent for sure, especially for the small shop to have it. The big shops have had them for longer, and they probably downplay it because people want, you know, you want to say this is a handmade guitar that sounds nicer. But, you know, yeah, I'll use any tool I can to help me get the quality and do it a little faster so I don't have to make no money.
Mm-hmm. All right. We talked about almost every facet of this guitar. I guess the trapeze tailpiece, are you cool with that? Are you going to go somewhere else? Do you know?
I'll probably do trapeze. I thought about a few other things, but I like the look of it. And I'm not saying I'll always only do that tailpiece, but I think that's part of the look of that model.
Yeah. And do you, with things like tailpieces, do you just have to buy what's available or do you make your own tailpiece?
You could. And I've thought about it.
Metallurgy. Are we going to get into metallurgy?
Yeah.
Now?
Oh my goodness. That would be really cool to have a proprietary, you know, tailpiece. Mm-hmm. And there's elements of it that wouldn't be that hard to make, but I'm not opposed to just buying one that looks fine. I don't know.
I'm just curious, the
Cal brand guitars, he's making, I think he was on the podcast maybe a month or two ago. He's really into making his own hardware. And I'm like, man, that I wish I could do more of that.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to balance. Okay, should I spend another time and money on this thing or just buy the one off the shelf?
Sure.
I don't know. You could make a case either way.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to make the case that you make this as easy on yourself as humanly possible. Because you've got other guitars to build.
I know. And it's like all these, I love the idea. And I greatly admire other builders making their own hardware. And it's like, man, that's so cool. But then I'm like, there's no way I could ever do that and continue to pay the bills, at least the way I'm structured now. Or I'd have to charge an unbelievable amount and price yourself out of the market.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense if you are known for one or two models and you're able to just make a batch of that stuff and use it for the next 10 years. But
yeah,
who knows what the demand will be for Harmony, Summit Tone, Jupiters.
Yeah. It'd be like my self-titled albums that I bought 500 of. And I've still got boxes. I mean, how many people have boxes of their band CDs? It, like you couldn't have the foresight to know you're not going to sell those, even though you're getting a good unit price. Don't bother. It would be like that with hardware. Oh, I found this manufacturer that can make the tailpiece for me. I've just got to buy 250 of them.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I make two guitars for the Fretboard Summit that one year and then have a box of these things.
Are you saying that you do have a solo album?
I should not have mentioned this.
Is this on Spotify? It's, can we
no,
listen to this?
Oh, it's come on. Horrible. It's terrible.
Camp?
I would be willing to send you personally one CD, but it's, ugh, yeah, I'm embarrassed of it. I don't want it out there.
Okay. All right. I'll honor your wishes. It I can't believe it took us this long to come up on that, but okay.
I don't know. I've kind of, I'm okay not doing music for now, like this season of life. Mm-hmm. And if and when I do it again, it's going to be, I think it's going to be quite different. Like this, it's the format of that was bluegrass. It was just a trio.
Okay.
And I'm at a different place now. And okay. And the songs weren't that, I'm embarrassed of it.
You don't have to go any further. I totally understand. We've all been there. All right, Micah. So you got a little bit of work to do. I think you and I will probably communicate a bit offline without it being a podcast and kind of hammer out sure. a few details, but let's follow up in a couple of weeks because this thing is just a few months away.
I know,
it's insane.
It's really coming up.
I know. But yeah, if anybody wants to see this thing in person, now is the time to book your summit plans and register, because I looked and there's some dirt cheap hotels right now in Chicago, which I was surprised by. And I don't think that deal's going to last for long, but we'd love to see any podcast listeners at this thing, and it's going to be great. And I'm sure this guitar is going to be amazing, and somebody's going to go home with an amazing creation from you.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And yeah, it's almost a shame to give it away. It's going to be so hard to do but it's going to be great.
Okay. Well, Micah, thanks as always. Again, send me ideas, folks, podcast@fretboardjournal.com. Love to hear what you guys are all thinking. I'm sure we've got some harmony experts out there who are like, no.
Yeah, right.
Don't do what you just said you were going to do.
I'm sure. Oh, yeah.
Now's your chance to speak up, people.
Speak now, forever hold your peace.
Totally the case. All right. I'm going to let you get back to work. You got plenty to do.
All right. See you, Jason.
All right, so that was my interview with Micah Bruce and with Creston Lee and my rambling intro on why you might want to come to the Fretboard Summit. Who knows what will unfold August 24th to 26th in Chicago at the Old Town School of Folk Music, but we do have a lot of great artists and many of them are on fretboardsummit.org right now. We'll be adding more, but you're going to want to sign up while you can if you're thinking about this, because it is going to sell out, and I just wanted to give you all the insider scoop.